So, Dr. House, as we look into personality, borderline personality disorder, and thanks for sharing the history of that term, too. One of the things that you were sharing with me is that it's important for us to recognize how borderline personality disorder develops.
Yeah, so just an understanding of this, there's a theory about this that has some good, interesting data to support it, and it's called the biosocial theory. And bio has to do with the biological components, and social has to do with the social or environmental components. And so what we think is that this is a disorder that has both of those components that contribute to its development over time. And the biological components have to do with the idea that some people are just born more biologically vulnerable to emotion dysregulation. So some people are just temperamentally predisposed to being more sensitive emotionally. They're more easily upset, more easily angry, sad, anxious. And this is probably just a genetically based vulnerability. And if you look at the temperament research, maybe 15 to 20% of kids are just born with this kind of more sensitive temperament.
Wow, 15 to 20. And do all of those 15 to 20% either run the risk of developing BPD or actually develop the disorder?
Well, no, the majority don't develop BPD. So that's not sufficient to develop BPD. So the other component that's needed is what we call an invalidating environment. Uh-huh. And invalidating environments are, the way that we define invalidating environments are environments that pervasively and chronically respond to children's thoughts and feelings, as if they are inaccurate or unrealistic or trivial or unimportant.
Gotcha.
And there are lots of different ways that this can happen. So as an example of invalidation, I use some examples of invalidation that are like everyday examples of invalidation. So if a child says, "I don't like cake," and a parent says, "Yes, you do. Everyone likes cake. Of course you like cake." That's that's invalidating, because you're saying that what the child says they don't like, they do like. And if a child brings home a 95 on the test and the parent says, "Why didn't you get a 100? You could have gotten a 100. That's an example of invalidation.
Interesting. And with the cake example, seems like that could be so innocuous. Okay, the child says, "I do like cake," and the parent says, "You don't." And it seemed like, "Oh, no big deal." But that could actually have an impact on the child.
Well, so here's the thing. All of us, I mean, I'm a parent of three children, and I could tell you I invalidate my children from time to time, no doubt. Like, invalidation is just a sort of part of life. Like, we all get invalidated from time to time. It's sort of unavoidable. But in invalidating environments that we're talking about, that is the most likely response. It's the chronic and pervasive most likely response to anything a child says.
I get
is like, "No, that's not really how you feel," or "That's not the right way to think," or "You're crazy," or "You're wrong," or "There's something wrong with you."
So it's a matter of making sure that we're not looking at one invalidating statement as an isolated event, but seeing it part of a history of making invalidating statements that have a cumulative impact on the child.
That's right. So in invalidating environments, it's the chronicity of it over time that can have an impact. And here's the thing: I actually believe that parents and partners and siblings are, for the most part, doing the best they can living with emotionally sensitive people, and that I don't sort of judge or find fault with people who are doing the best that they can. And I think that parents can contribute to an invalidating environment without being awful or abusive or insensitive people, and without having anything but the best of intentions. And yet, nonetheless, sometimes families do create invalidating environments because their children are just so emotionally sensitive. And it's sort of like, it's just a mismatch between the emotional needs of a really sensitive child and what the family is providing. It's like being a swan born into a duck family. You know, it's just like, there's just a mismatch between what the child really needs and what the parents are able to recognize and provide.
So that being the case, are there signs that parents can be aware of that may signal to them that they have a child who may be much more sensitive than their other children?
Yeah, well, I mean, typically parents can know this. It's just a matter of recognizing it for what it is and not sort of blaming the child, because often what happens, or blaming yourself, because often what happens is parents think either there's something wrong with this kid that they're so emotionally sensitive, and they keep thinking that the child has to, you know, is doing something wrong and they need to be punished, or we need to sort of criticize them or punish them, and so they suck it up and stop being so emotional. Or the parent thinks I'm doing something wrong, and they and they may still sort of resort to punishment or invalidating the child as a way of trying to get things to change. And I think instead what needs to happen is a recognition that, you know, some kids are just biologically vulnerable this way, and what's needed are different parenting strategies. You know, not all kids can be parented the same way. And that more emotionally sensitive children actually need different parenting strategies that are sensitive to the needs of that child. Now, that having been said, there are families, some of our people with BPD actually grow up in environments that are really abusive. In fact, many people with BPD grow up in environments where child abuse is happening, and that's a common example of an invalidating environment where a child's needs are not being considered. Another kind of invalidating environment is families where parents are so overwhelmed by their own mental illness or by their own substance abuse or by their own difficulties of one kind or another, that they're just not able to attend to the needs of their child. And so children are kind of somewhat emotionally neglected because of that. So there's different ways in which environments can be invalidating to an emotionally sensitive child. And what happens, we believe, over time, is that the emotionally sensitive child affects the environment, and the environment affects the child, and this transaction over time results in this kind of chronic and pervasive dysregulation in emotion for the child who doesn't learn to label their emotions, doesn't learn to regulate their emotions, doesn't learn to solve problems effectively, and that kind of thing. They judge themselves as bad for having the emotional difficulties that they're having, and don't learn effective strategies for solving the problems that they're having.
And so some of that plays out in the way the child relates to the child's own self, as well as the way the child relates or fails to relate to other people. I know you were sharing with us earlier that relationship problems are one of the ways that the BPD shows up. And this,
this
is part of the reason.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Exactly. Right. So what I wanted to tell everyone is that on May 24th, Tuesday, May 24th at 7 o'clock p.m., here at MCG in the Health Sciences Building, there will be a public event. We're having a panel discussion to raise awareness about BPD and also about its treatment. So I will be there, and some other experts in the treatment of borderline personality disorder will be there. It's open and free to the public to come and hear about borderline personality disorder and about the treatment programs that are available. And we would just like to invite anyone listening who's interested to come and join us.
That will be truly a great event to attend. Could you tell us where the Health Sciences Building is located?
So the Health Sciences Building is located right along St. Sebastian Way on the MCG campus. And I'm not sure how to tell you better than that, but it's along St. Sebastian Way on the MCG campus, and I can send you a link to a map or something that you could link to for your readers, some kind of information, or for your listeners, some kind of information where we can link to a map to help people get there.
Yeah, we could do that. And I'm thinking probably St. Sebastian Way, is that the section that is right next to, that runs right alongside the ER, or the opposite side of Walton Way?
The opposite side of 15th Street. St. Sebastian Way runs right between University Hospital and MCG. So it runs from Walton Way to R.A. Dent.
Yes.
Right along there.
Gotcha. Yeah. So they,
that road.
Yeah, everyone knows where that is. Cool.
And we'll have signs out directing people.
Okay.
So we'll have some signs out.
Do they need to register?
No, they don't need to register. You can just come.
Awesome. May 24th?
7 o'clock, May 24th.
Outstanding. On a Tuesday evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Mark it down. Go ahead, mark it down. The 27th will be here before you know it. Dr. House, thank you again so very much for joining me today and speaking about a very, very important topic. And I appreciate you for all the work that you're doing in helping with this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, stay with me. You're quite welcome. I'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.